Welcome back. Well, President Cyril Ramaphosa has signed into law the controversial debt relief bill. The legislation provides for the extinguishing of the debt of heavily indebted consumers who earn a gross monthly income of no more than 7,500 rand, have unsecured debt amounting to 50,000 rand, and who have been found to be critically indebted. Treasury has estimated that the debt relief proposals could result in as much as 20 billion rand being written off. Joining me for a look at the implications of this and more is the CEO of African Bank, Basani Maluleke. Basani, thanks so much for your time today. So I know when the bill was kind of being proposed, the banks opposed the bill. They really didn't think this was going to be a good idea. Now that it has been signed in, just how much of a risk is it for African Bank? Do you know how much of your loan book is exposed to this type of customer?
Yes, we've done a lot of analysis to understand how this will affect our book. And while I'm not at liberty to disclose what that number is right now, it will definitely have an impact. I think what worries me more than anything else is that the reason we were against this in the first place is that we think that there are other ways to manage the issue, to manage the concept of over-indebtedness. And I think the banks have been doing a lot of work, and particularly at African Bank, we've been doing a lot of work around lending more prudently and ensuring that our customers are able to service the debt that they have with us. And I think what worries us is that banks are going to start to limit the exposure that they have to the customers who are caught up in the ambit of the Act, and that means that those people will have to fall out of the formal lending system and potentially end up getting more high-priced debt and becoming even more indebted, which militates against the very purpose of the Act.
And the specter of loan sharks then increases as well, right?
Absolutely. So basically, people are not going to be better off as a result of this, and I think that's what's really unfortunate.
Does it lend itself towards you tightening your lending criteria? Are you going to have to go back to that and look at who you lend to and the
Absolutely.
Criteria that you follow there? Are those discussions within the bank already happening?
Absolutely. I think, and we know they're happening across the different banks, and we've been looking at it, and we have put in place, we've changed our provisioning to provide more against customers who are already on our books, who may be subject to the legislation. And in addition to that, we are going to have much more stringent lending criteria towards customers who fall within the ambit of the Act.
So you're going to have much more stringent lending criteria. It's that exact reason that led to your customer base reducing a couple of months ago. Do you see this leading to a further reduction in your customer base?
It may. So I suppose, look, when we came out of creatorship, we did tighten our lending criteria quite a lot. And as a result, you're right, a lot of customers were no longer falling within our risk appetite. And we did lose a lot of customers as a result of that. And you're right. I mean, look, what we are expecting is that we just won't be able to lend as much to customers who fall within the ambit of that Act. But it may well be that our customer numbers don't grow to the extent that we would have liked over the next couple of years because of the Act.
I bring it up because South Africa finds itself in such a precarious economic time, and that's going to be putting pressure on your operations as well. And to withstand that, obviously scale is one thing that you can do to guard against it. And it also comes at a time of increased competition. So how do you gain market share in a time like this, given all the metrics that are at play?
So I suppose it is about providing the best customer experience. It's about providing a very compelling value proposition. And that's exactly what we've been working on over the course of the last few years at African Bank. So the launch of our My World account, which is really kind of the cherry on top of everything we've achieved during the course of this year, is a very, very important goal for us in achieving the status of an organization that is very future-centric and future-forward, one that understands what our customers actually want and is able to give it to them at a price that is lower than what everybody else is able to do. So we're very proud of our new transactional bank account, and we do think it offers something very, very unique into the market. But over and above that, you know, in terms of our lending, we have been focusing a lot on starting to provide more risk-based pricing on our lending, which means that we do have a very attractive value proposition for all of our customers. And as a result, I think that will also put us in a very favorable position as customers start comparing across the banks and start trying to get the best price product for themselves. So in addition to that, one last thing, we're also very proud of the fact that we do offer the best interest rates for savings products in the market. And because we have been doing that now for, I suppose, the last 2 years or almost 2 years, we've seen some really nice growth in our retail and savings base. So I think all of these things really put together a package or a view of a bank that's growing and that's offering best in class in everything that they do.
A view of a bank that's growing. A lot of the other banks are looking to cut, you know, traditional bricks and mortar branches as well as the move to technology. I know that's something African Bank is looking to do, at least the move to technology.
Right.
Are you looking at closing any of your branches?
Absolutely not. So we have a much smaller branch footprint than the other banks. But what we are very focused on doing is ensuring that our branches are where customers actually are. So we spend a lot of time every month looking at how profitable our branches are, what's the footfall in those branches, and based on that, we then either close branches and open branches elsewhere, or sometimes even add a little bit to the branch network. But I think for the foreseeable future, we will probably stay at around 400 branches, and where required, we will move them around to ensure that we're in the right catchment areas.
Bisani, you're certainly drawing a picture of an African bank that has a very firm footing, which leads one to think that your shareholders are likely to be looking for an exit. We've already had the Reserve Bank say that it's looking to kind of get out of being a shareholder in the bank. You've ruled out the possibility of African Bank itself taking on the Reserve Bank's share. When they do exit, what's the best case scenario here for you? Are you hoping for IPO? Are you hoping that the other shareholders increase their holding? Or perhaps even seeing African Phoenix perhaps take up that that stake left by the Saab?
We definitely have not been in conversations with African Phoenix. You know, at the end of the day, the shareholders must decide, must make a call on how they want to exit. But what I want to say is this. Our shareholders have been very, very supportive of African Bank, and for that I am eternally grateful. And they've also been very supportive in the sense that there's a clear understanding that, you know, the bank must be in a position to be able to create an exit for them. That is, we must have grown enough, we must have reintegrated into the capital markets, and at that time, you know, only then will we be able to take advantage of things like a listing. Because then we will be an investable proposition and so on. So I still think that is some way off. And I do think because 75% of our shareholders are not natural shareholders, that being the Saab and the six major banks, they definitely will be looking to exit. But I think that's still a way off.
Still a little way off, but yeah. Let's leave it there on that note. Bisani, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, Bronwyn.
That was the CEO of African Bank, Bisani Maluleke. And then as we wrap up the show and head into a short break, gender pricing, commonly known as pink tax, has taken center stage because of the implications it has on the economy. Our reporter Nolovuyo Kunge took a closer look and filed this report.
Walk down any aisle and products manufactured for women, usually in pink, stands out for you. But even though this pink razor has the same description as this razor and it's the same brand, the price difference between these two is 35% more because of the color of this one. And this has led to people classifying this as the pink tax.
Beauty comes at a price, and this price is called pink. So essentially the implications for groceries, toiletries, contraceptives, from a woman's perspective. So the pink tax is essentially all this. There's a difference of price on these products, like razor blades, sanitary pads, perfume, roll-on. So women pay much more than men do.
This situation is having a huge economic impact because women earn less, but they're expected to pay more.
We are facing a tough economic climate and customers are feeling it in their pockets. It's especially tough for women, as research shown that they still have less disposable income than men. But there's more to this picture within the South African context. A shocking 38% of children live with only their mothers, and a very small percentage of our population have income levels that allows for solo parenting by choice.
So if the implications of pink tax are this dire, who then addresses the situation? We asked the major South African retailer to comment on this. They declined, saying that the pink tax does not exist in their store, begging the question, does the onus of settling the situation rest with the government?
I think it's government and retailers, because retailers do have the necessary measurements or protocols to remove those barriers. So government sets the policy. So last year, Tito Mboweni wanted to remove the sanitary tax on sanitary pads. So that's a step forward. But retailers then have to be aware of the implications of having just pink razor blades next to blue razor blades and then setting the price tag. So you have to be aware about that. And I think it's a matter of having these conversations to allow them to be aware and make the difference.
While activists like Candace continue to make people aware of the situation, Pink Tax remains a reality.